Some of the most gripping reporting of this past year has been a special investigative series by the New York Times on the more than 2,000 group homes for the developmentally disabled in New York State. Now, these homes were meant to correct past abuses. Before 1972, the developmentally disabled, the mentally retarded, people with Down syndrome, autism, severe cerebral palsy, were largely warehoused in huge facilities. But in 1972, then a young TV reporter, Geraldo Rivera, did an expose on one of those institutions, Willowbrook, with a doctor who blew the whistle on conditions there. Now, the pictures of young people that appeared on TV screens crawling in their feces were shocking.
The doctor had warned me that it would be bad. It was horrible. There was one attendant for perhaps 50 severely and profoundly retarded children.
The ones that we saw were the most severely and profoundly retarded. There are thousands there like that. Not going to school, sitting on the ward all day, not being talked to by anyone.
Quite a remarkable report. Well, a class action lawsuit was filed against New York. Later, federal laws would be drawn up, granting civil rights to the institutionalized. New York and other states emptied those warehouses, started group homes. Companies grew to run them and to take in the billions of dollars in state aid. Parents and families of the disabled felt relief, some for the first time. But the New York Times series finds that things have gone terribly wrong in some quarters. Overpaid executives raking in state dollars, putting family members on the payroll, no oversight, no repercussions. A whistleblower describing the system as a cult. The Times describing New York State's relationship with care providers like a spouse caught in a bad marriage. The reporting has already forced some changes in New York, but there are still many questions, and other states are, of course, listening in. Series co-writer Danny Hakem joins us from the studios of WAMC in Albany, in upstate New York. He's the Albany bureau chief for the New York Times. Danny, welcome and congratulations on this reporting.
Thank you for having me.
And let's just tell one story from the upstate area. One of the most high-profile deaths that you talk about was 13-year-old Jonathan Carey. He's autistic. He was killed in 2007 when two staffers were supposed to be caring for him at his group home. One sat on him trying to discipline him. And after he died, because he couldn't breathe, they actually drove around for a long time before even bringing him back to the home. Tell us more about this story. Obviously, it's a horrible tragedy, but what also illustrates what's wrong with the system?
Well, I mean, there were a number of things. I mean, one thing we did in the Carey story was we looked at the two workers who were in the van when Jonathan Carey died. And one of those workers had been fired by four different private providers of services to the developmentally disabled before he was hired by the state. Each of those four times he was fired for cause. So that right off the bat makes you wonder, what kind of oversight is there really, you know, when the state hires an employee? The other worker in the van had worked, I believe, 2 weeks straight without a day off when this incident happened. At one point, he had worked something like 80 days straight, or just an enormous amount of time without any days off. So there was clearly no control over overtime.
Well, Jonathan's story tells us a lot, too. His parents had trouble controlling him. They wanted him to be safe and sent him first to a state school, but discovered that the staff was withholding meals to discipline him. They pulled him out and found out he actually had post-traumatic stress disorder from his experience, and then sent him to this group home. Look, you know, families who have someone who's developmentally disabled know that many people who work at these homes are angels. They're doing God's work. But what did you find across the board about the workers?
Well, look, it's obviously, it's a very difficult line of work, and it's also often a lowly paid line of work. I think what we found is, you know, while there are many very good workers, there is just a lack of oversight across the board, whether you're looking at homes that are actually operated by the state or homes that are operated by nonprofit groups. I think the first story we did looked at workers who were found guilty of abuse within the agency. So these cases never got to criminal courts, but the state said, you know, these people are guilty of, you know, beating or punching, you know, the developmentally disabled. And then what would happen is, more often than not, instead of being fired, these workers would be transferred to other group homes, and then we would see them repeating these crimes. And, you know, I call them crimes, but actually the state was rarely passing on these issues to actual outside law enforcement. They were just self-policing themselves.
Well, and you also uncovered that in some cases there were, you know, directives to the workers saying, you know, don't talk about abuse. And there was a whistleblower, a caregiver named Mary Moriello, I believe.
Yes.
She resigned this year, but she secretly recorded her superiors. They are evading her questions about repeatedly hitting clients with a stick. This was in one home. Caregivers had something they called the magic wand, and Mary saw them beating residents with it. And here Mary talks to her superiors, Kate Bishop and Andrew Morghese, about that.
Repetitively hitting a disabled individual with a stick, you can't answer the question if that's an assault.
Beating somebody like this with a stick.
Every time he moved off the mat, they would step on his hands, hit him with a towel, wrap up the towel and hit him with it, or hit him with a blue stick. Shift after shift after shift, he was hit with a stick by several employees. Is that an assault?
So Danny Hakem, they not only wouldn't confirm if this was abuse, she says they never reported it to the police.
It was almost like the agency was saying, well, you know, if you feel like something was done, you go report it to the police. And Mary is... you know, I think she was 23 at the time, and she was a trainee. The fact that senior management officials at this agency, this state agency, are telling her, you know, it's your responsibility to go to the police when she's brought these issues to them, is, again, it's a sign of that the culture of this agency is gone awry. And what struck me in the year and a half I was working on this project is just how many workers came forward to me who tried to blow the whistle, who saw things going on that disturbed them, and they were actually, you know, they were retaliated against by the state.
Some of them also told you how angry they were, that they felt their union was complicit.
That's right. They would sort of automatically protect these abusive workers and try to negotiate down their punishments.
So you have workers who are abusing, and in, you know, one terrible case, sexually abusing the residents of these group homes. They're also charged with giving them medication, and many aren't trained, and that becomes critical when all of these psychotropic medications many of these people are on got mixed up.
That's right, and I don't think this is a problem that's unique to New York. You know, I found residents on cocktails of 6, 7, 8 very powerful psychotropic drugs. They each have, you know, a lot of side effects and complications that go along with them. I had inspection reports from inspectors from the State Department of Health. They would look at some of these cases and say, what are these drugs being used for? What is Thorazine being used for in this case? What is Risperdal, another antipsychotic, being used for in that case? So if inspectors from the Department of Health are visiting facilities and wondering why these drugs are being used, that certainly raises some red flags.
We're talking about Abused and Used, an ongoing New York Times series about abuse and neglect of patients at group homes for the developmentally disabled in New York State. The series prompted a report from the federal government last month, which criticized New York State for failing to account for how it spends public money on New York's privately run but publicly funded group homes, which have grown in the decades since the state stopped warehousing the developmentally disabled in institutions. Times reporters uncovered stories of low-paid staff routinely beating patients, officials who look the other way, parents who can't get information on their children, including a 13-year-old named Jonathan Carey, who was crushed to death by a caretaker who sat on him. Also, misuse of state funds by well-paid executives like Joel and Philip Levy, by all accounts respected social workers, who then opened their own company and became multimillionaires with homes in the Hamptons and abruptly retired after the Times reports. Danny Hakem is Albany bureau chief for the New York Times, co-reporter of the series. Danny, how much money goes from the states to these companies, and what kind of abuse did you see there?
The state of New York is unique in the amount of money that comes in this system. I think it's about $10 billion. It far exceeds the amount of money spent by any other state. What we saw is that in many cases, executives of nonprofit agencies, which are now the bulk of the industry in New York, we're taking huge payouts, you know, $1 million at a time, apartments being paid for family members of executives. We saw fancy cars.
Well, in fact, in the case of the Federation of Multicultural Programs of Brooklyn, they hired a retired police officer with no experience to be the chief executive. He made $350,000. He put his son, two sisters, and a sister-in-law on the payroll. And in another case, I think someone's child who was going to school in New York, the organization paid $50,000 for her apartment?
That's right. And I have to say, we saw that over and over again. These weren't just at the sort of fly-by-night agencies. These were at some of the largest and most prominent agencies in the state.
You know, you're thinking, this money, this it's $1.8 million, I think, per client that's supposed to go to the residents of the homes. It just seems as if it's going to these high-flying executives. Is there any sense of, you know, shifting some of this, you know, the huge amount of money, this faucet of money that comes from the state, so that more of it goes to the workers, the caregivers, so that it's a better paid job?
Well, the state is redesigning the whole way this money is apportioned out. And that, and I think that's going to be a very a heated process that we're going to see play out over a few years. And it's certainly all these private providers, you know, I'm sure a lot of them will use whatever lobbying muscle they have to keep aspects of the system the way they are. You know, as the years have gone by, these entities have gone from, you know, caring for 10, 20 people to caring for hundreds and hundreds. And the state never really assumed a regulatory role or the regulatory role that it should have over these private providers. Rather, they've come to rely on these providers to take on this role.
Well, so Danny Hakim, what do you think is the conclusion here? Is it just that more oversight is needed? How do they change things?
You do need to have some level of transparency in how these agencies are working. You do need to have some level of oversight. And you need, you know, when things go wrong, you need to tell outside law enforcement what's happening. I mean, there's no reason why when a developmentally disabled person is assaulted that it shouldn't be reported to an outside law enforcement agency, just like it would be if you or I were assaulted.
We know there have been some changes since the series. What have the changes been, and is, you know, sort of mandating that kind of reporting, is that one of them?
Yes. And what the state has said is already they've made great strides in reporting these kinds of incidents to outside law enforcement. You know, care for the developmentally disabled, I think, will always be a challenge and a problem, and certainly not just in New York. I think, you know, across the country and all over the world. It's a very difficult field. You know, I think it's something that's always going to benefit from some outside scrutiny by the press and others.
And have there been any criminal charges in some of the things you found? You know, people spending the money that's taxpayer money that went to a company, spending that money on a daughter's New York apartment?
I don't believe there was in that case. I think in some of these cases, there have been fraud charges. And certainly you see investigative agencies, you see the state inspector general now getting involved in some of this. I think we are starting to see more of these private agencies being held accountable for how they're spending money.
And Danny, just one last thought. What about parents and family? It's heartbreaking to read how some of the families didn't even know. They would find log books, you know, by mistake and realize right. that, you know, their child was being treated a certain way. How do you, what can they take from this?
Well, it's such a tough thing. You know, I would hear sometimes from readers, well, why, how could a parent, how could a mother, you know, put their child into one of these places, into one of these group homes. And what I came to realize over time as I reported this series, a couple on their own just cannot take care of some of these folks as they age.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it is extremely difficult. You know, when you have someone with the mind of a 2-year-old with the body of a 20-year-old, it's very difficult for, you know, an older couple to continue to care for them. And so that's really an agonizing story that I saw play out over and over again.
But are they going to have more rights, you know, to find out what is going on with their children?
Well, I think we're starting to see that. I mean, you mentioned the Jonathan Carey case. His father, Michael Carey, got a law passed that allowed parents for the first time to get investigation reports involving incidents that involve their children. A few years ago, parents couldn't even get that information. So if their child was assaulted, they might not even ever find out. Governor Cuomo did appoint a new commissioner of the agency. You know, she's talked a lot about changing the culture of this agency, but it is a process that will take years to carry out.
Danny Hakim, Albany bureau chief for the New York Times, co-author of the Abused and Used investigative series about rampant abuse in New York State group homes, It's a lot of reporting. We'll link you to it at hereandnow.org. Danny, thanks so much.
Thank you.